Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, it feels like it's been about 3.5 weeks since the Bucs played a game against the Dallas Cowboys, but it hasn't been that long, and yet they're going to play on Sunday, Game 2. Atlanta Falcons come to town, 4 p.m. game at Raymond James Stadium, and somehow this Steve Versnick, this feels like an absolute mismatch. And a mismatch, I can't say it, and I somehow think it's going to be a close game. Something about it tells me that the Falcons are going to come in here after not scoring a touchdown, I think, last week and losing to the Philadelphia Eagles at home. They're going to come in here and give the Bucs everything they can handle and then some.
Well, you wonder, you know, it's a divisional game. So while there's a new coaching staff there and such, you know, these teams know each other. The personnel know each other. The Bucs have a little long. I mean, it's hard to believe a week ago, as we're taping this Thursday night, it was a week ago the Bucs were playing right now.
Incredible.
It feels like it's been longer than that. It really does. It's amazing.
Yeah, it does.
So, you know, the layoff for the Bucs. Now, I mean, they're back at practice. Atlanta's got to be ticked. They didn't even score a touchdown.
Right.
You'd think they're going to come in motivated. It's their shot to get the Super Bowl champs. Dallas had a shot to beat them. I mean, we're ahead late. Now, you know, I think that game, you know, if the Bucs don't turn it over four times, it's not even that close. But
oh, right. Yeah.
But, you know, kudos to the Bucs for turning it over four times and still winning the game. That doesn't happen very often. And a -3, you know, turnover differential. They only forced one themselves. So it wasn't like the other team forced had three or four, and it was even up. You know, it definitely feels like a mismatch. I find it hard to figure out how Atlanta's going to keep it close. But it's the NFL. And, you know, most games aren't blowouts in the NFL.
Yeah, and I've always thought week one is a liar. Sometimes it's not, but, I mean, I can remember, and I always harken back to Brady again when, you know, 2003, I'm sitting in Philadelphia because the Bucs are going up there to open the season even as a Super Bowl champion. They had to go open the season at Philly. They closed the vet, opened the link, and I'm watching Sunday games, and the Patriots go to Buffalo, and it wasn't a particularly great Buffalo team. It was an okay Buffalo team. I mean, wouldn't have been great, right, when they had Jim Kelly. So it was after that. So started the 2003 regular season. They got beat 31-0. Nothing. Like, it was a complete – I was stunned. I was like, oh, my God, the Patriots are going to stink this year. They went on to win the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, they had a great year. And and that's the extreme, okay? I understand that. It's just – and I'm not picking the Falcons to make the playoffs. I'm not saying – that I'll be surprised if this is, you know, I think the spread is like 8, 8.5, something like that. But I just know that, you know, when you play each other two times a year, and, you know, the biggest problem they're going to have is that they're just new, right? They got a new scheme, new coaches, some new players, and that's just something that they'll have to deal with. They'll be better at the end of the year than they are now. But when you're on the grass with guys that you see twice a year, like there's no – sort of, you're not in awe, and I'm not saying the Cowboys were, but the familiarity is such that you're not just watching these guys on film. You felt them on the grass. You've gone up against these guys, and so the fear factor is gone. I mean, there were not that long ago, and we're going to write about this on Sunday in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. You know, the Bucs came off the bye week, and everybody talks about how well, you know, after the bye week. Well, after the bye week, they played Minnesota and didn't play a great game. If you remember, the Vikings missed a bunch of field goals that day. They wound up winning the game, and it was relatively close. Minnesota, not a very good team. Then they go to Atlanta, and they're down 17-0 at halftime. I mean, they can't, you know, cover anybody. Matt Ryan's bombing away. You know, they can't get a first down. And we were all thinking at halftime, like, this season's imploding right now, right here. You know, they're running out of games. And that's when Jason Pierre-Paul, I guess, kind of went nuclear in the locker room, the leader that he is, and said, you know, this has to stop. Like, we're going to do anything. We have to go out here and just dominate the second half. Brady spoke, I think, a little bit, and that's when Brady came back. And I think he threw five touchdown passes in the second half. And remember, Devin White got off. He had three sacks in the second half, and they wound up winning going away. And from then on, the coaches say, you know, we were in attack mode offensively. That's when we decided, hey, let's just go after people. You know, we can do this. You know, I think it helped that Antonio Brown had been there a while at that point, so he became more of a player that day and going forward. But, you know, my point being that Atlanta has always had talent. It's going to take them a little while. But look, whether it's Arthur Smith, Arthur Blank, B. Arthur, it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, you got new coaches, but you have good coaches. Arthur Smith knows what he's doing. Dean Pease, their defensive coordinator, was with the Patriots for years. I mean, talk about a guy that faced Brady, you know, every day in practice. He was their linebackers coach. I think at one point he might have been their coordinator. He's, you know, like 72 years old. He's been around forever. So they'll have some wrinkles. The Bucs will have to play better. You know, you're right. They're not going to get away with losing the turnover battle by three and then having, you know, 11 penalties for 110 yards mm-hmm. or something like that. They made a lot of mistakes, and good for them. They won the game, and that's what champions do. You know, and Brady's always said you got to find a way to win early so that when you get to November, that's when the teams really separate themselves. And so they found a way to beat a pretty good Dallas team, which since then have just been obliterated by injuries. But by the same token, it wouldn't surprise me if the Bucs won going away. I just think I know how the NFL goes. I know that, you know, week one is a liar, and that a lot of the teams that you saw win week one, like Philly, some others, they may not be heard from again, you know? I'm anxious to see how much better the Bucs are coming out in this game, because they gave away a lot. And they're beat up. I mean, this Sean Murphy bunting thing is not a small thing. Losing a starting corner is tough, and especially a guy that played in the slot. So that you need two players to replace him. You know, Jamel Dean's going to have to play big outside. And then when teams go three wide, I think Ross Cockrell's going to get the first bite of the apple inside. And he had a great camp, you know. Had that one day, had three interceptions, and, you know, he's looked really good. But they got options. I mean, they could always move, you know, since they're going to get Jordan Whitehead back, which is huge, they could always move Antoine Winfield down there if they needed to, or Mike Edwards. And we know that, you know, Bowles has been pretty exotic already. But it's just, you know, you're seeing it around the league. There's guys getting hurt every day. It's a long season. It's 17 weeks. So, you know, the 2021 season has begun, and I think 2020 has been put away, and they're going to have to earn their way just like they did a year ago.
Well, I can tell you that the Bucs are favored by 12.5 points. It's the second biggest
12.5.
Yeah, it's the
wow.
second biggest spread this week. The Browns over the Texans is 13.
Wow.
So
wow.
You know, Vegas and the betting money is saying you know, the Bucs are going to win big. And look, I think they are. I think, you know, Atlanta's going to try to do what Dallas did and attack, you know, Tampa Bay on the outside. But yeah. I don't think they have the weapons to do it like Dallas.
No,
did.
Not quite. They got Gage and mm-hmm. you know, and it's going to be interesting to see. They really didn't utilize the tight end, the kid from Florida, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle. And he's an unbelievably tough matchup. I mean, if you end up one-on-one with mm-hmm. him, good luck. So, you know, they're going to definitely test their tackling. And we talked to Todd Bowles on Thursday, and he said, look, you know, nothing that happened in that game was a big surprise to us. We had some communication issues because basically we tackled like it was a preseason game. He goes, we just, you know, our technique was bad. Our angles were bad. He goes, so, you know, they're glad they got that behind them. They had a whole game to try to get back into. I think that's one of the hardest things to do these days is that, you know, these teams are almost never in pads. In training camp, they never tackle to the ground. When I was, you know, back in mind, I would sound like the get off the lawn, my lawn guy. I'm not advocating three-a-days, but I'll say this. They used to tackle guys to the ground in practice. They used to have a couple periods where, whether it was goal line or it was just, you know, it was like, we're going live, right? And you never want to get a guy hurt. And that's obviously why they don't do it anymore. But I think it's a lost art, you know,
mm-hmm.
when when you try to go out there in a regular season game and you have not, and you're like, well, these guys have played football since they're 8 years old. Of course, they know how to tackle.
Yeah, but not players that big, that fast, that strong. And when you don't and do it enough. I mean,
you don't do it in the off season. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not, you know, going into Publix and tackling somebody. You know what I'm saying? Like, anything I do, I haven't put anybody on the ground since last February 7th. So, you know, of course you're not going to be as good at it when you come back, you know. And you usually see that, and you see a lot of special teams breaks down. You usually get your big returns in the first couple of weeks because all these guys that are playing special teams are what? Rookies, right?
Yep.
They're absolute rookies. So
I think
you see
offensive
a lot of
line
returns.
Play suffers too.
Yes. Yes. Because they're not hitting at all. They can't even have the pads on. And then when they do, you know, they don't want to beat the crap out of the guy in front of them that's on their team. So,
well, an offensive line more than almost any other position is about cohesion of five guys.
Right.
And less off-season programs, less and less, let alone hitting.
Yeah.
But even less reps of just walkthroughs in that.
Right.
As the off-season programs change and the preseason's getting shorter and such like that, the offensive line suffers because it's about five guys working in tandem together.
That's true. Yeah. And you can't do anything if you don't have pads on. You know, there's I can't play in underwear. That does me no good. About the offensive line, I was really impressed with those guys. You know, they came out, you know, was DeMarcus Lawrence or whatever. You know, they had several good players on the other team on the Cowboys, but they dropped back more than 50 times, Tom Brady did. Do you know they're one of only two teams in the first week that didn't give up a sack? Did not give up a sack. That's pretty stellar. Those five guys are pretty darn good, you know? I mean, for him to drop back 50 times, and again, you know where he is, and I think that actually works to his advantage. I think the offensive line knows where Tom's going to be, and they can push people away from him. But if you go back and look at the protection, I mean, Donovan Smith was putting some people on the ground in pass pro, not in run blocking, but like in pass pro. He was mauling some people. They were really, really good. Now, can you name the other team off the top of your head? Name the other team that did not allow a sack in week one. It's not a trick question.
I mean,
it's just
I know. I'm trying to think who it might be. I'm trying to who's got the good offensive
lines. Obviously, they won, and they have a decent offensive line, but...
Well, you wouldn't have to win necessarily to do that, although
I'll give you that they won the game. You're right, you wouldn't have to.
How about the Eagles?
No. Okay. Good guess, though.
I thought maybe
good
the Falcons against, that.
Yeah, I think the Falcons had one sack, if I'm not mistaken. The New Orleans Saints.
Okay. Well, and Jameis, you know what, five touchdowns?
Five touchdown passes.
No picks.
No picks. Now, they had the one hit on him that resulted in an interception that they took away because they said it was roughing the passer, which I thought was an egregiously bad call. So Jameis got away with the pick, but he was not sacked. So, see, Sean Payton knows how to protect his quarterback. But that's a really good offensive line. Listen, the two best offensive lines in football could be in this division. I'm telling you, folks, the New Orleans Saints, they ain't playing now. They're going to be right at the top. It's going to be Bucs and Saints for that division. And the Bucs will have to play really well to win it. They'll have to beat them. Jameis is going to get better. I don't know that they're ever going to get Michael Thomas back. They've got enough, you know, other guys that can do stuff. Kamara's great, but the threat of the downfield and that defense and offensive line is terrific. That offensive line is good. So, yeah, the New Orleans Saints, man.
It's going to be a fun division. I mean, I don't think Atlanta's very good, and I don't think Carolina's going to compete, but the top two, New Orleans and Tampa Bay, both should be playoff teams.
Well, you got Sam Darnold. I mean, you know, Matt Rhule's defense is probably a little better after, you know, this is what, his third year. When you get Christian McCaffrey back, you're a different team.
That's true.
You know, I mean, having him, I saw his first game. It looked like he had well over 100 yards rushing and receiving. He could do both, so it's so balanced when he. But he's.
Yeah. I'm not sold that Sam Darnold's big the answer, off. But.
No, maybe
I
mean, not.
I think he'll do better in Carolina than he did in New York, just because I think everything around him's better. But.
Yeah, and he beat the Jets. So I mean, again, week one is a liar. I know it's just. You know, he didn't. You know, that was a revenge game for him and some others.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, obviously Atlanta and Carolina should be the bottom two, and your top two should be New Orleans and Tampa Bay. And the question is, can either of those other two teams, Carolina or Atlanta, knock off the Saints? You know, can they go into New Orleans? Can they, you know, can they go into Tampa and win? And that's, you know, that's where the division is going to be decided, along with the two games they play each other, obviously. But they don't play each other until Halloween night in New Orleans, right before the bye, I believe. Very interesting.
Halloween in New Orleans. That could be very interesting.
Yeah, I've seen. Listen, there's a couple days you probably don't want to be in New Orleans, especially on the French Quarter. I've been to most of them. I haven't been to Mardi Gras, so I gotta take myself out of that. That's got to be absolutely crazy, right? Been there on New Year's Eve. Nuts. Just loco, okay? People jammed like you can't believe. Been there at a Super Bowl on the Saturday night before Super Bowl. Also nuts. Feels a lot like New Year's Eve. And then I've been there on Halloween. And the most frightening thing about being there on Halloween is that whatever is done to you, you can't identify anybody because everybody's wearing a mask. And I don't mean the kind for COVID. I mean, like, they're all, like, wearing freakishly weird masks and running around and doing stuff and pickpocketing and all kinds of stuff, man. It's crazy, you know, grabbing people. I mean, it's just, it's wild. So I will be in whatever hotel room I'm assigned and not going out that night. That is.
We'll be doing a podcast.
That's right. We will be doing a podcast. You're right. You know, the other thing about Halloween is, when did it become an adult holiday? Like, when did this happen? Like, years ago, right?
Oh, yeah, it's been years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Because I had kids when I was fairly young, and so it's always been about trick-or-treat to me. But now it's not for kids, it's for adults. And the weirdest thing would be, like, when you would go on the road, as we would often do over all these years, and, you know, Halloween might be on Sunday, right? Or it might be on Monday, I don't know. But you'd be on the road for Halloween weekend, okay? So on Saturday night, the night before the game, we might go out and have dinner, maybe find a drink or two somewhere. And you go into a place, and, like, you're the only one in the place who doesn't have on a costume. You know how weird that feels? It's like you're not the normal guy all of a sudden. And then people are looking at you like, what's his problem, you know? Well, my problem is I didn't plan on going. I didn't bring a costume with me to, you know, to another city so I could go out on Halloween night. Like, but seriously, I've been in places where I would have bought somebody's, like, Navy cap, you know what I mean? Or so just give me anything, you know, to pretend like I'm dressed up for Halloween. So, yeah, it's a very uncomfortable. Like, it's like wearing clothes. And I've never done this, but I imagine if you're the guy that's clothed at a nudist colony, you probably feel the same way, right? Like, you know, what's with that guy? Anyway, so we got that. We haven't talked about.
Well, the Rays won tonight, so their magic number
falls
to 8 to win the division, 7 to make the playoffs.
This thing's over, by the way, right? I mean, they've won.
They got 15 games to go. Your magic number's 8 to win the division.
No one could. It would take a cataclysmic collapse, right? I mean, you couldn't.
You just have to go 8-7 the rest of the way, and the other teams chasing you can go 15-0, and you're in the playoffs.
And you're still there.
I mean, you win the division.
Right.
So 8-7 the rest of the way, and that is, you know, assuming they don't lose any.
Yeah.
And that you includes, kinda, you know, well, you got three teams chasing you. They're basically tied or within a game. New York, Boston, and Toronto.
Yeah. Toronto is who you don't want to play, and they're going to make the playoffs, I think.
Well, they're the hottest team right now, for sure.
Would you want to play Toronto with that lineup? And pitching, like Robbie Ray and those guys? I mean, they got
here's what, and I'll lean on Neil Solance a little bit.
Okay.
Robbie Ray has absolutely shoved it up the Rays' butts all year.
Yeah, he has.
And
he's probably going
to again Monday night when they play at the Trop.
Yep.
Because he'll pitch again Monday.
Yep.
Their bullpen is very susceptible, and the Rays have shown that.
Yep.
Their lineup is when, you know, if you looked at that series, okay, so Waka and Yarbrough gave up a lot of runs. The rest of the bullpen and the pitching staff did fantastic in that Toronto series.
Well, they had the 3-hit shutout, which was amazing.
Yeah. But Yarbrough gave up the 7 runs in one game. The rest of the team gave up one. The rest of the team gave up 1 run in that game. Yarbrough in the playoffs is probably not on your roster.
That's true.
Waka's not on your roster in the playoffs, most likely.
That's damn true.
He gave up the other. I mean, you know, the Rays, the Blue Jays have a predominantly right-handed lineup. which the Rays do very well against.
Yeah.
So I don't fear the Blue Jays in the playoffs. Now, they're hot right now, and it's going to be hard to generate runs against their starters.
Yeah.
Berrios and Robbie pitching, Ray. Yeah. And, I mean, their starting pitching is good. Their bullpen is not.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing about the Red Sox, Yankees, and Blue Jays, which at this point is going to be one of the wild card teams. I mean, Oakland and Seattle are still in it, but they're a couple games back. Is the Rays have a lot of familiarity. They know how to get those guys out. And those are predominantly right-handed lineups, which helps the Rays.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to think of who's going to be, you know, pitching. Like I said, is Yarbrough and Waka going to be getting a lot of playoff time in a series against those teams? Probably not. And that's who gave up all the runs against Toronto. I mean, you know, it looked like they gave up a ton of runs and it looks bad, but if you break down who did what in those series against the pitchers that are going to be on your playoff roster most likely, the Blue Jays didn't do a lot in that series. And they're going to face off again this, you know, coming week at the Trop again, and we'll see how that works out. But some of this you have to look at, you know, who gave up the runs and who did what. And you know, so I think Oakland and Seattle would be tougher matchups for the Rays in the first round for lots of reasons. Familiarity, Seattle shoved it up the Rays' butts all year. What, 6-1? You also have cross-country flights if you're playing them, which doesn't help anything, although both teams have it. But, you know, but it's most likely it's going to be the Blue Jays, Red Sox, or Yankees in a one-game wild card. You know, two out of those three are going to face off, and the winner will face the Rays most likely.
Yeah. So
you know, barring Houston catching up, and they're like 4.5-5 games behind the Rays right now. So.
Well, it'll be good to get there. They should get what? Shane McClanahan should be coming back.
He's supposed to be activated Sunday, and hopefully Wander Franco comes back next week.
Huge.
There was a shot that Shane Boz was going to be activated for tonight's game to start.
Right. Right, I saw that.
They contemplated it. Instead, Luis Patino is going to go on his normal rest. They initially were going to give him an extra day. Now, Yarbrough will go on Saturday. May start, may go behind an opener. But Shane Boz was scratched from his start in Durham on Thursday. Many thought maybe because of coming up to the big leagues, but it turns out he had some back spasms on Wednesday, so that's not good.
Yeah, you don't want that.
So we'll see. You know, he may still be a piece you use in the playoffs, even if he doesn't get up in the regular season, pitching-wise, so... Patino will start Friday. Yarbrough will be the bulk guy, whether it's a starter or behind an opener on Saturday. And then McClanahan should be back Sunday and hopefully Wander's back next week. Nelson Cruz has a right forearm contusion from Thursday night's game. He got hit on the arm.
He said that was
nasty. Were negative.
He actually played the day after. And I was listening to Dave and Andy. I guess he showed them the welt. They go, man, I don't know how he's playing. It's like it's larger than a baseball, and it's just all multicolored. It's just like, you know, got hit in the wrong spot there, but you know, managed to swing it. So, well, the first thing they got to be is healthy, and then you'd like to see him, you know, finish up strong. And I don't know, you know, if they've clinched, I don't know what you do in those games against the Yankees and the Astros to finish the year. Do you rest guys? Do you go all out? Like, you know, are you trying to develop momentum? Like,
I think
you'll
end up doing what you do now. I mean, no guys are playing 6 days a week. You know, you're going to play 4 days that week. Or, you know, you'll do your normal routine. The pitching staff, like, if you win the division, the good thing is you're not going to play till Thursday. Your last game's Sunday. You don't play again till Thursday.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, set up your pitching staff any way you want. Where if you got to play the wild card game, you know, you've got to – you're going to have to play Tuesday night in a winner-take-all where you've got to use your best pitcher or maybe two of them to get through it. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. So you don't get to set up your rotation. So, but the Rays are in good position. What, 91 wins now? Like I said, they win 8 more games this year, which puts them at 99, and they're guaranteed in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're guaranteed to win the division, so.
Yeah. Don't you want them to win 100, though?
No, I'm just saying that. I mean, you could just win 8 more, and you're guaranteed to win. No matter if the team's behind you, go 15-0 or whatever.
No, I know, I know.
No, I mean they're on pace to go probably what 101, 102 at this point.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Yeah,
yeah. So no, I definitely would love to see them win 100, but more importantly, just clinch the division and
doesn't matter.
Preferably, you'd like to have the best record so that you have home field throughout.
Best
the AL.
Record in the American League would help you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so if you make it to the championship series, that you would have home field then too.
Yeah, I think that might be more valuable than, you know, than anything, than 100 wins for sure. So,
It's been a fun year, man. It's a fun team. I mean, despite what Tony Kornheiser says.
Yeah, listen, he's never liked Tampa. I don't understand what his deal is. He must have gotten some like bad Cuban sandwich or something here. I don't know what his deal is.
Doesn't everybody hate Tampa Bay now? So,
well, they're jealous. You know, it's cyclical. I mean, certain cities. Where, you know, the arrow is up now. It was for years in Boston. Houston had its run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this L.A. really certainly now is having one themselves. I mean, but it you know, it's just been, listen, it's been a long time since we've seen Tampa Bay and anything like this, and might be another 100 years before we see it again. So enjoy it.
It's getting ahead of it, but just think if the Rays were to win the World Series.
That would be unprecedented.
You'd be
the holder.
Yeah. In just over 13 months, you would have 4 boat parades, assuming the Rays do a boat parade. Because the Lightning's first one was at the end of September. It may have been early October. Yeah, they won it. Yeah, it was September 30th was the boat parade. Or was it October? It was September 30th or October 1st, 2nd, whatever, was the boat parade. And presumably the Rays would have it in early November. So just over 13 months, you would have four championships.
You've got the calendar slam is what it is. Oh. You know, we don't have an NBA team, so I mean, basically.
Novak Djokovic missed the calendar slam, but the Tampa Bay may get it.
Tampa Bay would own it. You're holding all three of the major sport trophies. I mean, you don't have NBA, obviously, but had Toronto done their job, then you could have claimed them. You know, you could have claimed the Raptors, but they didn't get it done. So, yeah, Dan Patrick has asked me the other day, he was like, I just dropped that name. He asked me the other day about, you know, Rick, things are pretty good down there. I know we make fun of like all the things, but it's pretty good. He's like, yeah, it is. That's why you're calling me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially that football team.
And the Rowdies have the best record in their conference, too.
Saw that, yeah.
I went to the game, Saturday night, where 6-0 the Rowdies won. They were
routed
the Red Bulls. They missed the extra point.
Yeah, right. They still getting good crowds and everything down there?
It was okay. Yeah. It was probably 3,000 or so, maybe.
Yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah, it was Hillsborough County Schools night there, so they had discounted tickets for everybody. So we were with a bunch of friends of my sons and went out there, had a blast. Like, anytime you put 6 goals up, I mean, how do you not have a blast?
And soccer, I mean, yeah. Speaking of discounted tickets, I think you can go see a Rays game for $10.
$10, for the whole homestand, the final homestand here. Tickets for $10 for every game.
They call it the John Romano plan, I think.
Is that what it is?
As suggested in his column, yeah.
No, it's if you want to cheer on your Rays and as they make a push for the playoffs here, $10, you can get in the door.
Should definitely do it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, before we get out of here, we're gonna jump back and forth a little bit. Jump back to football in the NFL. We haven't talked about Monday Night Football. That
dun,
crazy,
dun, dun, dun.
Crazy game, right? With the Las Vegas Raiders and the Baltimore Ravens. My oh my! Did the Raiders try to give that thing away? It was nuts. But
it's amazing. Since 2015, the quarterback with the most come from behind wins in the fourth quarter. Is Derek Carr?
By is it really?
Three more than anybody else.
Wow.
That's not the name I would have thought. He wouldn't have been in my top
five or ten
picks if you gave me.
Yeah. And I like Derek Carr as a quarterback. I loved him coming out in the draft. I'm not so sure he's, you know, in the best place, you know, with John probably hating on him all the time. But I mean, he's probably learned a hell of a lot of football, you know.
But how about the pass he made that they thought they won it in overtime?
Ugh.
And it gets picked off because the receiver bounces right off his hands up in the air. I mean, Derek's looking at it like, what am I supposed to do?
Nothing. And that, you know, that brought the whole thing after the game. How about this? How about when they're in field goal range to game, but they can't find their field goal kicker?
Well, because they went for it. Because
he's over there warming up on the net.
Yeah, they decided to go for it on second down, so the field goal kicker's, you know, practicing. He's like, yeah, I ain't coming in for a couple downs yet.
Right.
And they went on second, and they didn't have the kicker.
No.
And they didn't have a timeout, which put them back 5 yards. So then
they
sent
lost
the
5 yards and
then
had to call a play and end up winning it that way.
Yeah.
So it was insane.
It was just the way John Gruden drew it up.
Yeah, he did. He was melting down over there. Those are some great faces. He was funny after the game, though. He was in prime prime Gruden-esque, as you will. Gruden is tortured anyway, but to see him go through that, like to have a game, win it, had it at one, then basically throw it away and then have to go win it again. He was like, I'll tell you what, man, I feel like I won that game twice. You know what I mean? I feel like a cat with 9 lives. I'm 2-0, man. But, yeah, he also lost his mind a little bit. So who's the tight end of the Raiders again?
Waller.
Okay, Darren Waller, who's a unbelievable story, right? This guy was, like, on drugs. He used to be with, the Baltimore Ravens, if I'm not mistaken. That's where he started, one of those teams. But anyway, he ended up, you know, now he is arguably the best tight end in football, or certainly one of them, right? I mean, you got Kelsey, and, you know, there's a number of other guys that are, you know, pretty well known. But Waller is phenomenal. Now, they did target him 56 times Monday night. Like, it was so stupid. It was like, yeah, there's another pass to Waller. Oh, good, there's a pass to Waller. I mean, it was insane, right? And so inevitably he had some yards on his 24 targets or whatever it was. But after the game, you know, Gruden is asked about him. John, you know, this was John as an announcer, right? Like any time there was a player that he was calling a game about, he might be the best third down and six guy I've ever seen. You know, like he'd come up with these weird stats, right? Like, might be the best goal line runner.
Not good on third and five, but third and six.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. He would just categorize guys. Like, if I have to get a yard, man, that's the guy I want. So after the game, he goes, Darren Waller's probably the best player I've ever coached. Like, wait, what? And then without much trouble, we started, let's go in the Wayback Machine. Not that far back, okay? John coached the Raiders. And he had players like Jerry Rice. How about Tim Brown? Okay. Then he goes to the Bucs, and I don't know, Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, John Lynch, soon to be Hall of Famer, I think, Rondé Barber. I mean, are you kidding me? Darren Waller's the best player you ever coached? Come on, man. That's a come on, man, right there. They should do that on Monday Night Football. Come on, man. Come on, man. But, like, I don't know the Sapp guy you're talking about. I don't know this Brooks guy. I don't know what you mean. Darren Waller. That's the guy. That's the hill you're going to die on, the Waller Hill. Okay, John. What else happened? So we had the Monday night. Oh,
we had the Mannings.
Did you watch the Mannings?
I did. I was.
What did you think? I was mesmerized by it.
I liked parts of it. There was sometimes it got a little off the rails, I thought, and just kind of was kind of rambling
time, though,
and stuff. I thought it was good. I'll watch it again. I think, 800,000 people watched it according to the ratings.
That's not bad. Peyton's
compared to,
hilarious.
Like, 15 million that watched the regular broadcast, but.
Yeah. Oh, was that the breakdown? Not even have a million? They're close to a million?
Yeah, it was like 800,000 was the rate, the Nielsen rating.
Some people were complaining about the screen size. Like, they thought that the game was too small because they had, you know, they had the Mannings on camera and everything. That really didn't bother me. And I guess, you know, the idea is that you're just sort of there sitting there. They're in your living room or you're in their living room or whatever, watching the game, and they're commenting. Boy, he talked a lot of football, though. Like, there was one part where he was explaining the verbiage in John Gruden's offense and, you know, just what everything means and, you know, check into plays and different. It was very fast. If you're kind of a football nerd, you get a good understanding for just how much quarterbacks have to do in that short window of when they get the play is called in and how much they got to see and communicate. It was really interesting. And then, you know, Lewis comes on and they're talking about how Eli was funny. He goes, my first game, he goes, I think it was against Ray Lewis or one of my first games. And he goes, and I'm trying to identify the mic, and I'm like, 52's the mic, 52's the mic. And Lewis is like, I'm not the mic. So-and-so's the mic. And then everybody's like, I want to be the mic. And he goes, it was just like, and then Peyton goes, what was your rating that day? He goes, I think it was 2. His rating was 2. It was not good because the Ravens were great, you know, back in that day. But
I caught parts of it. I liked it when, you know, they were using the Telestrate a little bit and showing you some stuff and teach. I thought at times it got a little too inside football with some of the guests and the stories, and it just kind of got too far away from the game. I mean, you know, because some of the stories were good, some were just and it kind of got away from it. But then they would get back to it. You know, I saw part of Russell Wilson had some good takes in there. Ray Lewis was good on there. You know, it was, you know, some of the jokes between them were great, but I liked it right before the end of the first half, the fire alarm went off at ESPN.
I know. It was crazy, man. That was nuts. It's like, is that a fire alarm? Yeah. Yeah, it is. You guys are going to have to get out of there.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, man. Before the game, I guess there was a producer for ESPN or NFL. I don't know who it was, to be honest with you. I should know this name, but Dan Patrick was talking about how just give you how special Eli or Peyton and those guys are. So they're going to do this show, and they drove to somewhere in New Jersey for a funeral or a memorial service for somebody that either worked at one of those networks. I don't know if ESPN, NFL Network, one of them, and on the day that they were going to make their debut. So, and Peyton had written something, I guess, because I guess this person passed away a while ago, but because of COVID, they couldn't have the service. So he had written something about her. And, so he's just, that's a special family. And Peyton is known for, you know, all his handwritten notes and things that he sent to people through the years, and just really thoughtful guy. And I love Eli. I think, you know, He's always good to listen to, and I think it's gonna be fun. As they go, you know, they'll iron out some kinks, and as they go along, I think it'll be a good alternative to just, you know, watching the traditional broadcasts.
I love when ESPN does. I love the coaches' room, like during the college football championship.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of those, you know, they do some of the stat cast on baseball games occasionally, which are really good. Initially, I thought it was gonna be too deep into the stats on those StatCast games, but actually they're not. I mean, you know, they go through, like, you know, some of the, and they'll teach you the stats along the way, some, you know, but they don't get into the deepest stats that, you know, you just go blind looking at in baseball.
Right.
Unless you're
in
the, you know, the actual baseball ops teams, then, but.
Yeah.
ESPN, when they do those, when they try those kind of things, it's really good. It usually turns out pretty good, and I like what they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll definitely be watching. So, anyway, it's been a great week. We got, of course, big week of college football. The Gators are going to be hosting Alabama at the Swamp. That's going to be a good one. Be curious to see if they can keep that competitive, which quarterbacks play for Florida. Florida State, I guess, they got Wake Forest this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They need to bounce back in a big way. They need to beat somebody.
USF hosts FAMU.
Yeah, that might be a win.
Yeah. Auburn travels to a Big Ten team for the first time, I think, since 1931.
Penn State, they head up to Happy Valley. I don't know if they're any good or not. Like I haven't watched Auburn in a minute, so I couldn't really tell you. So we'll surprised.
My alma mater's
I'm a little surprised
at
the game days. Oh, you guys are Cincinnati?
Cincinnati's at Indiana. So.
Okay. Any word on whether Fickell is going to go to USC, or are they still?
I mean, so the athletic director at USC was the athletic director at Cincinnati who hired Fickell.
Right. Well, great connection there, yeah.
Yes. I don't think he goes. The way it was summed up to me by someone who knows the Cincinnati program well says, I'm yet to meet anyone who's worked for Mike Bond that likes working for Mike Bond.
Oh, really? Wow.
So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah,
I don't know if Luke liked it or not, but that was that was what someone close to the program has told me.
Yeah,
about him. So he's not exactly the best guy to work for, apparently.
Wow, well that's disappointing.
But it's still USC, so
Yeah.
And the football coach has a little more control than most other people that work for the athletic director. So,
right.
I mean, Urban said no way, except wasn't looking at the camera and wasn't really emphatic about it.
It's just really hard. I mean, that you would miss out on too much as an NFL coach by the time the season's over. I don't know how anybody from the NFL, unless they were just going to, you know, kind of mess up their NFL team. Petrino-like, or if Eric Bieniemy said, you know what, I'm going to go take this job and Andy can call the plays. I mean, I guess that could happen, but I don't see it. I mean, it's more likely like a Bob Stoops would go there, right? Somebody that's not working at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? I mean, it's not the job it once was, but there's a ton of kids right there. If you can keep them in L.A., man, there's like 12 quarterbacks that go around the country every year and end up starting for somebody. So,
well, we mentioned Penn State. James Franklin name gets thrown out all the time.
And there's supposedly mutual interest. Like, what's a better job, do you think, at this point, USC or Penn State?
USC.
Yeah, why?
And here, because you don't have Ohio State in your division.
Okay, so you think you can win? It's easier to win the Pac-12 and you can go to a national championship.
Absolutely. I mean, there's three teams in college football that are practically unbeatable at this
point. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State.
Right, and Penn State's in the Big Ten East. That's the second hardest division in football.
Right.
You know, you've got Michigan and Michigan State in that division as well as Ohio State.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's Alabama, Auburn, LSU in the SEC West. I mean, you know, that's the second toughest division in football. You know, you can beat Ohio State, but you're not going to beat them consistently at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You can own the Pac-12. I mean, I think USC is a better job. I don't know if I'd leave for it. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I mean, you know, USC, you can own that conference.
Penn State hasn't won a national title in a while, but I mean, Pete Carroll was the last USC coach, I think, that had a lot of success. That was 20 years ago, mm-hmm. You know? I mean, it's been a minute, and I was listening to Sean Salisbury was on there saying that, like, you can't sell USC to kids anymore. Like, they don't know what student body right is, you know? Salisbury was saying, he goes, they can tell you what every combination of Oregon's uniforms are, but they have no clue what you're talking about. If you want to talk a tradition about the USC, you know, it's how can I get to the pros? Are we on television? You know, let's go, you know, like, you know, can we win a national championship? That sort of thing. So I don't know what kind of coach is going to come in and attract those guys, but you know, your job is going to be to keep players at home, and they're going to need a dynamic coach to do that. So, you know, we'll see.
It was funny. I'm looking for a tweet from a couple days ago. The funny thing about James Franklin is every one of these coaching searches, he's always one of the candidates.
Yeah, and, you know, leverage, baby.
He did a great job at Vanderbilt. He's done a good job at Penn State. But if you look at just the pure numbers, they compared two different coaches. It was a tweet that said, you know, these two coaches.
Say which one it is, yeah.
And it was, you know, winning percentage was about the same. One had a few more games than the other coach. Number of championships was essentially the same.
Yeah.
Number of first-round draft picks the same. Number of the da-da-da.
Yeah.
And between two coaches, it was like, you know, which one would you take? And one was James Franklin, and the other was Jim Harbaugh. And their numbers are almost identical.
Is that right?
But it's amazing how they're viewed differently at this point.
They are, yeah. I think Franklin's problem has been on the field. I think he can recruit. I think he knows how to build a program. I don't mind him representing or my son playing for him. But I've seen him make god-awful decisions on game day. Like, mm-hmm. You know, fourth down, who to run, who not to run. Like, just things that have cost him probably some championships. But that's just my opinion of him. I got nothing against the guy. If he, you know, I think it's leverage. I think all these guys are looking for the next challenge, you know. Some just want to keep moving on. But he went from Vanderbilt to Penn State. If USC is a better job, I guess that's a step in the right direction. So I don't know. It's going to be hard to get a pro coach. I know that because, you know, once you go down that road, you're not coaching your team anymore. You might as well leave where you're at.
They don't have to make a decision on that for a while. I mean, it would still be before the end of the season, obviously. But
yeah, but recruiting, I mean, you're still playing when they're recruiting, even if they named him, like, in December and stuff. Like, you still got games to play usually. And, you know, that now you're divided. Your loyalties are divided. We kind of saw. I mean, it was funny because Lane Kiffin got the job at Tennessee, you know, in John Gruden's last year, and then but Monty started recruiting and was going to go on the staff, and you know, Gruden was furious. You know, suddenly the game plans weren't very good, and at one point he named Raheem Morris the next year's defensive coordinator, just thinking that, well, maybe guys will listen to him since he's going to be the guy next year. But then next year, Raheem was actually the head coach because John got fired. Didn't see that one coming. Still my favorite story where he calls his agent, Bob Lamont. Lamont has every other coach, right? He's, like, there's a couple agents, Jimmy Sexton, Lamont. They pretty much split up all the coaches in the NFL and in college pretty much. So it was a busy time, and John called him. He goes, "Hey, Bob, I just got fired, man." And Lamont was like, "John, don't mess with me, man. I'm busy." And he hung up on him. Seriously, thought he was just screwing when he hung up. And he had called him back, and he goes, "Hey, man, it's John. I'm not kidding, man. I got fired." It's like, wait a minute, what? You what? He had to call him back. "John, quit messing with me." He hung up. And he didn't say messing, but you get the idea. Yeah, well, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
that's hilarious. I hadn't heard that story before.
It's great. It's just great. And Lamont told me that story.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, hey, I had that same reaction when I turned on my TV in Pittsburgh waiting for the championship game the next day that I never covered. And, you know, Schefter was on NFL Network, man. "Breaking news in Tampa. Both John Gruden and Bruce Allen have been fired." I went, I didn't breathe for like 12 seconds. I was just like, oh, my God. Like, what just happened? And then I was on the phone till 4 a.m., never went to bed, caught a 6 a.m. flight, got off the plane, and went straight on ESPN. They were asking me who the coach is. I'm like, oh, I can tell you who it's not. But, yeah, Raheem Morris. That was crazy. Anyway, should be exciting weekend. Of course, we'll be all over the Bucs and the Atlanta Falcons. The Rays continuing, you know, their progress to winning the AL East, or so it would appear. And we'll have all of that for you along with all the college football, everything that happens over the weekend on Sports Day Tampa Bay on Monday. So for Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.